All right. Hope everybody has had a terrific day today. I don't know about you, but Wednesday nights are really, really hard for me to work all day, make the mental shift, and get here. So if there's any dramatic pauses, hopefully they're for a dramatic effect, but they may very well be for me to collect my thoughts. I'll do my best as we go through. We left Sunday morning off with three questions. The first one was, put yourself in the children of Israel's shoes, what they've been through leading them up to going in, crossing both the Red Sea, now the Jordan River, at Gilgal, the events that happened in the first five chapters, and they're ready to go in and take the land. So think about what all they've been through, right? That was homework assignment. Think about what they've been through, and think about where their headspace is as they're getting ready to enter the land. Think about Moses. Just a little bit before this, to where Moses was able to see, he was able to go up and see across the Jordan River, see into the land that he could not go in and partake of. And think about Joshua, who is taking over as leader when these people have always looked to Moses. It was all about Moses. Everything was about Moses. And now somehow you've got to get these people to listen to you. Somehow you've got to get over the fear of all of this. So tonight we're going to be looking specifically at geography, and then Lord willing, starting Sunday morning, Micah will start into the story. And I think you'll notice from looking at the syllabus, if anybody missed the syllabus Sunday morning, there's more copies in the lobby as you go to exit. You can get yourself a copy. And again, they were printed in such a way, if you want to carry them around inside your Bible, you can take a pair of scissors and trim it down, and it should fit in most Bibles to make it easier to keep up with. So I want to start with a disclaimer, partially because I don't want to take credit for anything that I did not do, especially multimedia. Micah might put something up here and you believe Micah did it, right? I have no graphic skills. So anything that you see tonight was definitely things that's riding on the backs of the others who have gone. Also, some of the streams. So I want to make it clear that the content that has been placed in here was either purchased or free. So, huge thank you to the ones who have gone on before, like Leon Malden, that went over to Israel. Steve's been to Israel. Trent and Rebecca, I use a lot of their pictures in a lot of the classes I teach. Satellite Bible Atlas, BiblePlaces.com, AppianMedia.com. These are all places that have gone over and have made really good content. And there's links to them on our members page for when you're teaching or when you're working with your kids that can really help you find material, find things to see. Because I don't know about you, but for me, it's kind of hard to see Israel for all the things that makes Israel up. If we think about the United States and I say desert, what comes to mind? Yeah, Nevada. I didn't exactly hear what some of the others was, but you got California, you got Nevada. We got a lot of places that's just desertous, right? We got places. What about if, when I say mountains? You got the Rockies and you got the Smokies. Are they very different? The Smokies are green on both sides. You go to the Rockies, one side is pretty green with a lot of evergreens and a lot of tall pines. And then you go over to the Utah side and everything's pretty short. And you start getting more in that arid desert area. Well, even though if we was to take the land of Israel, turn it on its side, what is north and south to Israel, turn it east to west, you got Coleman North in the state of Alabama. Just to give you an idea of the land of Canaan, it's just about Coleman to the Alabama state line, and then Mississippi to Georgia is north and south of the land of Canaan that we're talking about. So we're talking about a lot of geographical changes in a fairly small area. We don't have that much geographical change in what we're talking about. So let's start with putting ourselves in the children of Israel's shoes. You're leaving Egypt. You're leaving a fertile crescent in Egypt, right there where things grow, right? If you don't forget everything else about maps, what do you think when you see green on a map? There's vegetation and there's grass. So up in there, you see the Nile, where the Nile goes up. Well, children Israel was right up there in the middle of it while they were in captivity, while they were living in Egypt and then in captivity in Egypt. When you see light brown, what do you think? That's just sand, right? Nothing but sand. So, what did they see for the 40 years they wandered in the wilderness? They saw sand. They saw rock. They saw sand, right? They had heard of these great promises. How was the land described? A land flowing with milk and honey. What does it look like to them right now? Right? So for 40 years, this is the area of Mount Sinai. There's not a lot of green, lush vegetation here, right? So here's Mount Sinai. Here's where the Lord come down. And you can kind of see in this picture around the base of Sinai, you can kind of see a tent and an encampment. Now, I think that might be a shack over in the side, but you could see how a large grouping of people could set up tents. But again, I might be as tall as the tallest tree that they're seeing around and about them, right? Okay, so now we've left. We're headed north toward this promised land. We've left because while we're at Sinai, we made a covenant with God. I will be your God if what? You'll be my people, right? I will bless you in every way possible if you'll obey me, but if you don't obey me, I will curse you, right? These blessings, these curses, they were given to Israel. They're ready to go, and they're traveling north. Kadesh Barnea. I couldn't find a good picture of Kadesh Barnea, but I'm only in this picture of the wilderness of Zin. I'm probably 20, 30 miles to the east. So is anything better at Kadesh Barnea? So at Kadesh Barnea, what major event happens? It's time to send the spies in. So when the spies are going in to find this land that's flowing with milk and honey, this is where the people are waiting for their return. This is what the people are seeing. So at the point that we're at Kadesh Barnea, how long have they been exposed to this type of climate? From the Red Sea, the crossing of the Red Sea, through Mount Sinai, up to Kadesh Barnea, was it a long or a short time? Yes, less than a year, right? Probably, am I remembering right, about 3 months for getting out of the land, crossing the Red Sea, getting... So, if they would have obeyed God, how fast would they have had this promise, right? So we think about this promise and we think about the wandering in the wilderness, but God was ready to bless them much quicker than they accepted what He had to offer, right? So here, we've come rather quickly, and my memory may not serve exactly. What were they eating for these months while they're traveling? Manna. Not at Kadesh Barnea or before Kadesh Barnea, but at some point in time afterwards, what did they do about the manna? They complained. Can we not have anything to eat other than this worthless bread? Right? So, we're here fairly quickly. We've been eating manna. I would say the excitement is probably still pretty high from coming out of the land of Egypt, receiving the law, the excitement, because I'm pretty sure it was an exciting time, a rejoicing time as they entered into that covenant with God. All that the Lord has said, we will do. We're Israel. We're God's people. Let's go. Let's get this done. And they get up to Kadesh Barnea. They're told, send spies in to check out the land. The basic story is what? 12 go in. 12 come back. 10 say what? No, we can't do this. They're giants. We're grasshoppers in their sight. We can't do this. 2 comes back and says what? We got God. You know, God's given us this land. He said He's given us this land. Going back to the last class on faith, do you hear the faith in Joshua and Caleb's response? I can't wait for you to see the land that God has given us. What did they see? Right, we were in this desertous area, but if you get up around Jezreel, To those people that's been wandering in the wilderness, I imagine that green grass and vegetation looked really, really good. There's a date tree. I don't know about you, but I needed a picture of what a date tree looked like. I'm not a date fan. I've seen a few dates in a grocery store. Tried one. That was enough. But date tree looks a lot like a palm tree with these clusters up top, right? You've been eating manna. Does this look pretty good? You getting pretty excited about what the food choices are in the future? Here's a sycamore tree. Huge sycamore tree. Sycamore tree has fruit. I've never tried sycamore fruit, right? We have some Bible stories where that comes into play later. But yet, they're there. They're huge. Figs. Again, you've been walking around in the desert. I imagine figs look pretty good as you're coming up on the fig trees. Now, olives. The next one's about grapes. Olive trees. And they would see the olive trees. They're taking all of this in. Pomegranates. And they're taking it in. Pomegranates come in the Song of Solomon's. And it's in some of the, you know, we have these fruits that are very much all over the place. Even though we may think of Israel. And there's very much some very desertous areas in the land. But there's also some very lush areas in the land that they would have seen. What specifically was said about grapes? A land flowing with honey and what? What about the grapes? How big they were. Anybody got any specifics? How are they going to carry them? On their shoulders, on poles, on their shoulders. Again, to us, that sounds pretty outlandish, right? I'd have to say I've never gone to Publix, I've never gone to Walmart, and seen grape clusters of that size. But they got to the land and they saw the grapes. They saw the huge grapes. But again, and I think this picture come from Leon Malden, but an actual cluster, or clusters, many, many clusters, probably many clusters put together so thick that you couldn't separate them. If you see the man standing in the backside, I hope you can see the man standing there. So here's a man, even 5.5. We'll go with Adam's height, right? We'll go about 5'10". But that's huge, huge cluster of grapes. Does that need to be carried on somebody's shoulders? Think of the excitement that they saw. Now think of the reaction. Two people went into this land and said, "What a great gift God has given us. Let's go get it." 10 went into this land, and what did they see? They saw giants, they saw the walled cities, they saw how hard it was going to be to overtake this land, and they melted in fear. And they came, told the people, and of course, this huge grouping of God's people together, when they get this kind of news, they're obviously all got enough faith that they're going to follow Joshua and Caleb, right? Isn't that typically true, though, when you've got some bad news and some good news? Which one's typically going to get the quickest to be believed, right? The worst outcome or the best outcome? That's human nature. But what does faith call on us to do? To believe the unbelievable, to see the unseen, to believe what can be done that we can't, might not, could have imagined. And huge thank yous to Joshua and Caleb that goes into the land and says, look at what great things that God has given us. Yeah, there's giants there, but God's got that. Let's go get it. Exactly. And why even across the Red Sea and down to Mount Sinai and then up to Kadesh Barnea, was that the way that most people would have gone from Egypt up to the land of Canaan? We're going to see the king's high, or we're going to see the way of the sea in just a minute. That would have taken you directly from Egypt straight up. But what did the Bible say why they didn't take that trip? That's right. God didn't want their first encounter to be the Philistines. Right? That's what it said. He didn't want their first encounter to be the Philistines. So, he brings them in. He builds their faith across the way. Have they had things so far to build their faith? Absolutely. The crossing of the Red Sea, the manna in and of itself, to find food, to find water in a desert area as where they were in, all things of faith. Thank you, Freddie. Excellent point. So, think about how they responded. But again, the only thing I ask you to do is before you become too hard on them, put yourself in their shoes. Have you been there to where things aren't going exactly the way I thought they were going to go? You know, I had this grand plan built up about how God was going to do this, and giants was not in it. Walled cities, it's going to be hard to take down. It wasn't in my plan of how I saw this unfolding. Therefore, I become scared. And if you will notice, the wandering in the wilderness, and there's different, I mean, we don't know what path they took. Let's be honest. We don't know exactly what path they took. Different archaeologists, different researchers will give you different ones. This one actually come from Satellite Bible Atlas. But again, you're here at Kadesh Barnea. You show this kind of aimless wandering in a circle. They come up here, and they get to about right here, and they ask Edom, can we pass through? Edom said no. So they ask Moab, can we pass through? They said no. You know, when we think about long areas like bridges to try to get across the Tennessee River, and you may have to go from Wheeler Dam, you know, to Athens to get to 65, right? To get across the river. There's no good path across there. But think about with these mountains that they were dealing with, when they could not go through Edom and they could not come up here and go through Moab, what was their choice to go around? Well, first you have to travel far enough south. And how far south they went, not exactly sure. But you have to travel far enough south. And here, my eyes are not good enough for either one of these. Deuteronomy chapter 8, 2 and verse 8. But they come down to the south and they come around to a point they can cross across this mountain range and begin to go north and go around on the way of the wilderness on this side of Edom, this side of Mount Seir, so that you're not crossing through Edom's property, through Edom's land, and not crossing through Moab's property, Moab's land. And they get up to this area, and it worked really well for Edom and Moab to say no. What about the next three kings that tried to tell them no? Did it work as well for them? Nope. They had one problem. The next two kingdoms weren't what? They weren't family. They weren't Abraham, right? They weren't Lot's descendants. They weren't family. Therefore, they take the east side of the Jordan. And as they take the east side of the Jordan, three tribes ask for a possession on that side, on the Transjordanic side. Who is it? Reuben? Yeah, Gad and half of Manasseh. At first, Moses is upset about this because he's thinking they don't want to what? They don't want to go over and fight with us. But they make it very clear, no, we will go across with our brothers. We'll fight across with our brothers. But after it's all done and the battle is won, can we have this land? And it was granted to them. So now, the one other thing that I kind of wanted to point out, they were talking about that had this manna, they got up, they saw into the land. Afterwards, they came back. And they began to complain about this worthless bread. I don't know. And I know if I was in God's shoes, I would have said, you know that all those beautiful things that you spies saw when you was in the land? That's what you could be eating right now. But why were they even in a position to be complaining about eating manna? Their own lack of faith. Is there a lesson there? Have you ever suffered the consequences of your own lack of faith and then said, oh, why is God doing this to me? Right? Why is God doing this to me? Well, it might have been because I made a really bad choice. Well, upwards 40 years ago now, right? I could have been given the gift. I was offered the gift 40 years ago. I rejected it. Now, you come here. Now, as we are at this last pass, we've crossed over again. Last class that Cameron did, first five chapters, the end of the wandering. What has God done to build their faith? Right before this entry into Jericho that we're going to start with Lord's Day. crossed over on dry land again, right? We were at flood stage. We'll see a picture or two of the Jordan here in just a minute, but we're at flood stage. You're a priest. You got the ark on your shoulders and you're walking toward, what's your command? Yep. Step off in there. Just keep walking. Just keep going. They step off in there, and then what begins to happen? God stops the water upstream. They all cross. They bring the memorial stones across. The people come across, the ark comes across, the priests come across, and then what happens? The waters return. Any faith building in that? Did it build any faith for Rahab? You know, think about the people in the land. We're doing two things right here. As those stories were unfolding, whether it's the Red Sea that had happened close to 40 years ago now, or it's crossing of the Jordan that just happened, two things are happening. God is building up Israel's faith, and what's He doing to the land that they're about to go in and take? What did Rahab say about the hearts of the people in the land? Melted, right? Now, what else does God do at this point? Yep, He has told them, He's shown them, right? If you'll go, you'll do what I tell you to do, I'm with you. And I find, Cameron pointed it out, but I find the story of circumcision at Gilgal right before going in to take the land, when you're basically at the walls of your enemy and you incapacitate yourself for 3 days. That is that not a sign that God's people are saying, okay, I'm finally His? You got this. I trust you. Does that not take some serious faith, some serious trust to go through with that exercise? And I'm not saying there weren't people that when Joshua said it. And going back to Joshua, you're getting your start as a leader and your first command is, okay, we crossed the Jordan. It's time to go to battle. Go incapacitate yourself for 3 days. Most battle generals, that's not going to be their first command, right? To go make yourself to where you're as vulnerable as you can possibly be, because there is no way you can fight right now. But yet, they did it. We see great things with them, and we see the way God said in chapter 2, I think it is, over and over about the people, that they may know who I am, right? That the children of Israel may know who He is, as well as the peoples of the land may know who He is. And what was the repetitive phrase that He kept saying to Joshua? Moses said it to him at the end of Deuteronomy. God says it to him in chapter 1 of Joshua. Be strong and courageous. Be strong and be of good courage. Right? Messages that he needed at this time. So Moses. You're Moses now. The whole book of Deuteronomy to me is a man who's laying on his deathbed saying, here's what I want to tell my children before I die. I've given my entire life to you being faithful. Please, please remain faithful. Right? To me, that's what this whole book is about. You know it hurts him. You can see him. He did beg with God. God told him no. Let me go with them. No, but you can go out on Mount Hor and you can see across into the land. And this is kind of the view, and again, I think this is Farrell Jenkins' picture. A picture that Farrell Jenkins took while standing on this side of the Jordan River, this side of the Dead Sea, looking across the Dead Sea into the land of Israel, and to say, okay, that's what you get. That's what they're going to get. That's the fulfillment of the promise. Had Moses ever seen this land? You know, we think about it from Joseph. For Joseph, it would be going home. But is there a person alive that's seen this land? Now, thinking back to the spies, is there a person alive that has seen inside this land? No, the 12 spies that were sent in, what were they waiting other than the two? There's two, Joshua and Caleb, right? But what was the wandering in the wilderness? What was the whole purpose? They were wandering until what? Until they all died, right? Meaning those 10 spies who had gone in and seen the land and saw how good it was had come back, and they had to die as well. So nobody. We think of this as this great promise to Abraham that was repeated to Isaac, repeated to Jacob, repeated to Joseph. Joseph did all that he did. Joseph wanted his bones brought back. But this isn't going back for these people. This is a whole new place that they're headed to. They've never seen it. And to this date, they've only seen a wild wilderness. So the Jordan River. All right, you're coming through. You've been in the wilderness. You're coming here, and now you begin to see. This is Jordan River, a little bit south of the Galilee, Sea of Galilee. And just to give you a taste of what this would have been like. And this was not at flood stage, so you can imagine the waters was higher when the priest would have stepped off into that water to go across. So here we have Jericho, and now we have Joshua. The last of these, put yourself in their shoes, questions. Joshua's getting started, right? Joshua is ready to take on this leadership role. He's been told and repeated again and again and again, be strong and of good courage. Right there at the end of chapter 5, again, we see the angel coming to him and reassuring him that, hey, this is going to be okay. God has got this. Now, as I kind of show this part of the land, this kind of shows the original entrance. And I know you can't see any of the names, but here they're on the plains of Moab. They come across, and here's Gilgal. You come to Jericho, and that's where that first battle is. And as you come up, you know, if you'd come down, you'd go to Jerusalem. And then as you turn and go up, you'll come up to Bethel and Ai, where, Lord willing, we'll get to in this next week. But I want to point out Shechem up here, because it's very important. Mount Ebal, Mount Gerizim, if you get to the very end, I got something that kind of illustrates that sound acoustics that can happen in this area where you think about people that spread that far apart talking to each other where they can hear. But in any case, that area of Shechem is very important to the people, just like Shiloh is important to the people. We will get here to the division of the land as the quarter goes along, but this side over here is God's plan. Israel is to take possession from the bottom to the Negev, up above, to the beginnings of the mountains up at the top. And his plan, did his plan go all the way to the Mediterranean Sea? Yeah. The sad thing is, and we'll get to it as a quarter unfolds, but if you look at the map on the right, I hope you can see the light shade of yellow versus slightly darker brown. I kind of wish the contrast would be a little bit more. But the light shade of yellow is what they successfully took. And the darker shade is where they failed to completely drive the people out of the land. Another sad story of all of this. God intended them. He had promised. Was the problem a lack of God's bringing the promise to fruition? No. Promise was made. He was there with them. They did not fulfill it. They get the land. They divide the land. But they could have had so much more. And why did God want them to completely drive the people out of the land? Go back to Genesis chapter 15. The iniquities of what? The iniquities of the Amorites were not yet full. So, over and over again, why did God want them to drive all the inhabitants completely out of the land? Two reasons. Okay, idol worships. So let's label that their evil influence on the children of Israel, right? And then going back to the iniquity of the Amorites, what was the other reason? Judgment on those nations for their evil. He was judging those nations for the evil that they were. And he wanted them to separate the evil from them and to push it completely out of the land and get rid of it so that it would not be a constant snare to them. And again, I think we can find several. Not that I think we need to go build a commune somewhere and everybody move there and everybody else moves out and we only shop inside our commune and we only live inside. No, we're to live in the world that we're in. But again, this concept of push the evil out. Because when the evil is there, what's it going to do? Did they convince the people to get rid of idolatry, Doug? No. What happened? Yep. They married their sons off to their daughters. They took their daughters for their sons. I mean, they took the nation's sons for their daughters. And all of a sudden, you have this mixture of their religion, their beliefs, their iniquities being brought right in to Israel. So, now if we look at this a little bit from a geographical point of view, because geography is extremely important as we start talking about these, where the battles are taking places, what's going on, how the warfare happens. You've got the way of the sea I was talking about a little bit earlier. If you're coming from Egypt, here's the river of Egypt. If I'm coming from Egypt, it would be very easy to come right up through here. But if I'm going through Ashkelon, if I'm going through Gaza, through this area right here, whose territory is right there? That's the Philistines. And that's the giants they saw. That is huge, huge people. But again, you got this coastal land right here. And right through that coastal plain, there is a nice little highway that would take you through. Where does people, even today, where do we typically build our highways? With the least amount of resistance? Why go blasting through a mountain when I can go up the coast, right? So there's nothing special about where the roads would have gone. The second road would have come across right through here, which we know as number two, the hill country, which is this highland right up through the center of Israel, Jerusalem. The city Jerusalem is in the middle of the hill country. So when they go up to Jerusalem, from where do you go up to Jerusalem? Everywhere. That's one of those trick questions. From where do you go up to Jerusalem? You go up to Jerusalem from everywhere because Jerusalem is higher than anywhere. You have to go up to get to the city of Jerusalem as it's up in the hill country. But just for your reference, because I know you can't see the names, there's Hebron, Bethlehem, Jerusalem above, and we'll get up here to Shechem up top, and there's Jericho, and Gilgal, where all this is happening right now. And then lastly, you've got the Jordan Valley through here, and I think we'll see some pictures that shows just how drastic this is. And then you've got another highway that comes on this side, which is the Way of the Kings, King's Highway, and it kind of goes around Edom, around Moab, and goes up to the east side. So if I'm going back over to Turkey or Rome, what would be Rome today? Obviously, I'm going to stay on this side of the Mediterranean Sea and come over. But if I'm actually going back over here, like to Babylon, this over here toward the Tigris and Euphrates, I'm going to come across the mountains and I'm going to go on this side of the Dead Sea and I'm going to go up and go about. So think of this as we start seeing their travels. It's important for the travels. One of the things I had circled was Megiddo. And when I say the word Megiddo, throughout the rest of the scriptures, you equate that with what? I think I heard Revelation said really quietly. You may not have said it very quietly. It may be my hearing. Also, just a war in general, right? Why is that? Well, this is one of the few. This is Jezreel Valley, which is right in that area of the Mount Megiddo. That looked pretty flat. Not big enough for the size of the armies that they talk about coming together in Revelation. No, obviously figurative. But if you're going to battle, this is a pretty good place for people to come together in battle. Well, when the rest of the country is hills and huge hills and valleys, that's kind of hard to fight in. So this is one of the areas why Megiddo is so much associated with war, is because this is one of the areas that's flat to where war could actually happen and people can come together. And in the plains like that, what can rain do to chariots? We'll get there. Make them pretty ineffective. This is one that I hope you can see the contrast from where you're sitting. I've got a couple of different shots of it, but I hope you can see as the mountain ranges come up and then drastically drop off into here. This is another nice view. This is south at the Dead Sea. At the bottom is the south of the Dead Sea, and you kind of see it's not as huge of a rise over the hill country here. But you get up close north of the Dead Sea, where there's Jericho right north of the Dead Sea. You see that the mountain terrain, the western highlands, they come up a little bit higher here. And then as you get up north, you see even more. Here's Mount Carmel that juts out into the sea. You see the mountains come up. You see the Sea of Galilee. You see Mount Hermon up in the end down there. And this plains that even out over here on this side. There's just another view to where if you turn it around. So this coastal highway, what does it look like? The coastal highway, the hill country, the Jordan Valley, or the Dead Sea Valley, however you want to say it, the Transjordan. Well, this is kind of what that coastal plain would have looked like. This is obviously a modern-day highway. This came from Satellite Bible Atlas, but a modern highway going right up toward the coastland. So this is, think of this as the way of the sea, right? Obviously it wasn't paved, but this is the way of the sea, coming near the coast. Get up toward, I think this is Gath. It's either Gath or Ascalon. I can't remember. I think this picture is of Gath from the Bible Atlas. But again, you see in that coastal plain, there is some hills and some valleys, but a lot of beautiful places to grow your produce. Now, as I start coming over into the hill country, which is that second highway that you would go across, dead center would be the one that would take you up to Jerusalem and through Hebron, up to Jerusalem, to Bethlehem, to Jerusalem, Shechem, as you keep going north through the top of the hill country there. And this is what the terrain would look like. On the top of a desert type mountain. So now I'm just continuing to scoot over. We're in the Dead Sea now. So here you can see desert on the western coast of the Dead Sea. Is pretty much desert. You see the Dead Sea. Pretty, but not going to grow much. Go a little bit further north and you actually start to see vegetation. This is the Jordan River as it's flowing up as a crooked river up through there. You see the vegetation going up. You see the stream coming down. And this picture is at the very top up here. You can see the Sea of Galilee. But right here is the Jordan River. And you can see how it just literally just winds down through here. When you see this, where we live, do you think river or creek? Right, this looks more like a creek to us. Now, if you look at the Elk River from above, the Elk River looks a little bit like a creek too. And Freddie can do some really good fishing there, but the Elk River is not that big. It's up for in certain spots. But as you see the Jordan Sea going up through here, at Sea of Galilee going up, this is what the land would have looked like. And I want to do one more thing just to give you, that we'll end with this slide, but to give you an idea of what this land looks like.
The Jordan River, let's follow the road from Jericho to Jerusalem on map 19. The road brings us through the different
this
districts
will go up
of Jericho,
to Bethel and Ai,
including the residential area
that we're talking
and
about,
municipal
but
Jericho.
We're going to go this way.
Passing through municipal Jericho, the road begins climbing up the ascent of Adamim, a ridge on the south side of the deep Wadi Kilt Canyon. Continuing through the rocky Judean wilderness, the road descends into a canyon called Nahal Og, which acts like a moat guarding Jerusalem's eastern approach. The road climbs up another ridge, then over the Mount of Olives to Jerusalem. This cross-section diagram shows the different segments of the route that travels from Jericho to Jerusalem. This is the route that Jesus took on his last journey up to Jerusalem. Note on the lower right-hand side of the screen, Jericho sits at 800 feet or 250 meters below sea level. Jesus would have passed through the different districts of Jericho. First, the residential area, and then about 1.5 miles away was municipal Jericho, built by the Hasmoneans and Herod the Great. From municipal Jericho, the route climbs on a ridge called the Ascent of Adumim, or the Red Ascent, to a ridge crest where Roman and Crusader period forts guarded the road. From the forts, the road descends into a canyon called Nahal Og, and then continues up toward Jerusalem on a ridge where parts of the Roman road can still be seen today. It reaches the eastern shoulder of the Mount of Olives and then climbs over the top of the mountain. Finally, the road descends down into the Kidron Valley. It's been shed on the road.
You can stop it back there if you want to. But the thing that I want you to see there is when we leave Jericho and we start going for Bethel and Ai, that's where the army is going. That's what the kind of terrain they're going to be traveling. Thank you for your time and your comments tonight.